but many of you hopefully will be joining us later anyway. So can we start off with Denise?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, we had a very intense discussion and prepares against users analysts, and we got very valuable points for our project. And so, well, the first thing, the question: do we have a problem with the income statement, and do we need to fix anything? And they said, well, yeah, we've got a problem because it seems that IS1 is not applied in the way it should be applied. The principles in IS1 for presentation of financial statements are not very well understood, and they are not properly applied. So maybe we need to do something just to make sure that these principles of disaggregation, of understandability, of providing transparency in the financial statements are better applied in practice. So, the next point, I think that the analysts, the users in general, were very emphatic about, is that they would like preparers to provide sufficient information in their financial statements to deal, to try to explain why transactions happened. They suggested that preparers should be more proactive and work more closely with users in that respect. For instance, in terms of the information that Cochiro presented here in slide, I think it was slide 8, they said that ideally it would be great if preparers could provide details about all these adjustments made to operating profit, but on a consistent basis, on a comparable basis, year by year, so they can really explain and get an understanding of the business on a sustainable basis. Regarding the presentation of non-GAAP measures, non-performance measures, I think users were fine about preparers presenting these measures. However, well, again, they are fine that there will be a feature of the financial statements. They are not a bad thing, but there needs to be better information around these figures, and preparers should be as transparent as possible when they report these figures. Now, in the preparer side, well, they would like to have their flexibility for preparing the financial statements. They like the flexibility, and they would not like in the future for us being very prescriptive or with prescriptive rules about the presentation of information, because they want to tell the story the way they want to tell it. They need to preserve their freedom in telling their story about their financial statements. So that's a dilemma that we will need to face as standard setters, whether to be to allow this flexibility in the presentation of financial statements, or whether to impose this rigidity and in the presentation of the line items.
Yes. My way, I think it's a balancing act.
Yeah.
A certain degree of standardization, but not too much. Because it's quite difficult to define, say, operating profit in a very strict way that would apply to every type of business, every type of company. So the idea would be more to give a principles-based approach to those definitions and provide some freedom to management to explain how they did adapt this principle in their specific manner, but with disclosures of kind of presentation policy choices. Accounting policy choices in applying the principle of what is operating profit, which would mean consistency over time, etc., and transparency.
So in that respect, preparers are, in principle, are fine about us trying to standardize the presentation of the income statement by providing these sections of operating, investing, and financing. However, again, there is this confrontation or challenging thing about whether we should loosely define those sections as a starting point that they can use for their presentation purposes, or whether we should rigidly define them, as we have attempted to do in the past. I think those are the points that I have.
Well, there seems to be a consensus that a lot of the currently non-GAAP performance indicators are useful and could be brought usefully into the financial statements, and would have a higher quality if they were in the financial statements rather than outside. And having them in the financial statements with some broad definitions could legitimize those things being presented. more than either outside. And given the constraints from some regulators, it would help companies to be able to disclose it in the financial statement.
And I think that's it.
Yeah. Okay. The balance sheet.
There were some remarks about the need for more information to be provided about the nature of the assets, whether they pertain to the operation cycle or whether they're outside of the things that create operating profit. And there was a discussion which went back to the old financial statement presentation project about how much cohesiveness we should have, and it was recognized that we failed for good reasons to achieve the full cohesiveness approach, and that maybe disclosures, some form of disclosures could help without trying to push this cohesion principle so far as we did in the past.
Yeah, there was also some concern about how to define or categorize some, for example, assets as operating, non-operating, for example, goodwill, how to categorize those items, and again, how to provide a link if they want this desired freedom, the preparers. So
did we faithfully represent the views of the group, Malcolm, Christophe, and the others? Okay.
Surprisingly, but yes.
Thank you.
Should we move on to Mary and Suzanne?
We also had a very great discussion and great input, so thank you. I'm going to just go through our lists in short order, and that way Mary can chime in or if you have questions. In general, the first reaction to are these capturing problems, especially the one where there was revenue that went straight to a profit number with nothing in between. We had an outburst of "that's unacceptable" and similar things. So the idea is that some amount of minimum structure. This will be consistent, it sounds like, with a lot of what Denise and Philippe represented. Mary asked people for their wish list of a line item if they could add or subtotals that they could add, and uniformly prepare or user COGS. And the subtotal operating profit.
COGS being cost of goods sold.
Sorry, yes, thank you. Sounded more like I was coughing than actually saying an accounting term. But within that was a reticence to have us actually precisely define everything, and rather ask the preparer to provide very clear definitions of what's in the numbers, as well as, you know, actual calculations, so that it's not a mystery for the users. So maybe some minimal definitions or objectives we could put around a line item or subtotal, as long as there's absolute crystal clarity from the preparer's side. There's some principles that came up over and over, especially from the users, but also the preparers. It was quite consistent that consistency mattered. So whatever, however you were reporting, and whether it was line item or subtotal, or a sort of a style consistency was very helpful, as well as really using the notes very, very well for additional information that is useful for the users. We did tackle and discuss sort of alternative performance measures very kind of specifically, but some of the principles around that also apply to in general if you're adding certain line items or certain subtotals. But the feedback really was don't ban them from the primary financial statements. But back to the point, be very crystal clear about what's in them and the build up and how you actually do the math and the calculation. Balance sheet. I'm sort of moving on to balance sheet. Did I miss anything from Evans? I'll move on to balance sheet. But we had analysts from both the equity side and the credit side really point out that the balance sheet's really important. And even if you're not looking at things from the credit side as a credit analyst, there's capital structure issues and really new innovative hybrid products for financing regular type corporate, companies, and that information is really crucial for users.
And I promised that we would solve that in FICE, not only from the classification, but also from the participation rights information perspective. So it's all on Manuel's shoulders.
We'll let him know tomorrow.
Anything else from the group?
I'll add in a couple of overall comments that we did have some discussion about whether there was too much flexibility with permitting both nature and function. And while, you know, one view was require everything by nature, I think the majority view was function can be more effective in many settings. And there, that's what led to some of the views around, I characterized it as ISB providing more a skeleton, probably more headed to the descriptions than rigid definitions, and a few well-chosen items would do a lot to drive improvements in consistency rather than trying to be too grand and prescriptive in terms of the number of line items or subtotals. We had one point made that it's hard even within a single organization to enforce consistency across many different subsidiaries. So don't get too elaborate that it would be better to do a few things and improve practice that way. And I think it was important about the balance sheet because I tried to ban discussion about the balance sheet in light of time, and that and there was an insistence that we cover that at least briefly because that, you know, people wanted to make sure that this isn't, you know, it wasn't just Mitch saying as a credit analyst looking at the balance sheet, it was some other people saying that this is important information and we shouldn't lose sight of that, as well as the point about that was noted in the slide about the integration of the balance sheet with the P&L. And let me just check the questions for other comments. I think that was, I think those were the main points.
I've got one question, if I may. So everybody wanted the subtotal operating profit.
Everybody thought if we were going to add one subtotal, that was the number one priority.
And everybody felt that should be defined by management, but clearly defined. Would they place any constraints on management in terms of how it's defined?
We didn't spend a lot of time talking about that, but the overall sense was that we should be giving at least a description objective. I think people's views fell on the side of us providing robust descriptions rather than rigid definitions, but also that the ISB should be doing more right now to drive consistency rather than saying just let market forces take their way. So I think that was confirmation of question one, that these are issues that should be addressed and that our role was to promote driving consistency, and if we increase the required line items, not hugely, but some key ones, some subtotals, descriptions rather than definitions, and required transparency, that market forces would then kick in and drive at least industry consistency.
There was an assumption that those definitions would be sensible, I think, was the feeling around them.
I think that's what I was trying to.
The definition of operating profit would be a reasonable and well understood definition rather than.
But my point is, it may be reasonable to define operating profit after goodwill impairment, and it may also be reasonable to define it before goodwill impairment. Mm-hmm. Would we.
Allow industry freedom would have been our comment, I think.
We didn't start talking about individual specific items like that, and I could see us having a lot of problems as a board resolving that, but that was the sense of description rather than absolute definition combined with a requirement to be explicit about what you put in there.
Yeah. Steve,
back, Kevin.
Go ahead.
But if the objective of this definition of operating profit is to find something that's more closely aligned to operating profit that we have in the cash flow, then it's a moot point about impairments and CGU impairments and everything else, because it's trying to link to an income statement to a balance to a cash flow.
I don't.
Right.
In the discussion we were having, it wasn't in order to link to the cash flow. It was a discussion of the P&L itself and strengthening the usefulness of the P&L. Marietta's from our group, so I don't know if she.
Oh.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to add to that. I mean, we did have a discussion very generally about APM, so goodwill impairment didn't come up specifically, but basically there was consensus that APMs should not be banned outright, that they actually should be permitted, but it should be made very, very clear, you know, what is an APM and how it was calculated. So, I mean, my sense of what the group's been discussing would be that we'd be looking for operating profit, including the goodwill impairment, but then they are free to show an APM with that added back and call it operating profit, operating profit, or something like that.
In your group, concur, agree, support that.
Then that would require us to be more specific about what is operating profit. We would need to say, by the way, it includes goodwill impairment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think we might be building out beyond the extent of our description in terms of talking it.
Maybe I'm leading with Rachel.
Thank you. I'm hearing a lot of very similar themes to the discussions that we had in the group that I was in. We had, I think, a very passionate debate, actually, considering it was sort of towards the end of the day and people, you know, would be expected to be getting tired. People were really sort of energized about this topic. I think from the user's perspective, there was a lot of concerns about the lack of comparability between companies, and partly that was down to, we thought, the lack of sort of structure in IS1 in terms of what should be in the profit and loss account. And I think certainly from the users was an idea that actually we should be looking to include as a minimum some additional line items in the profit and loss account, which would provide that better basic structure to P&L. There was some discussion about, well, what do you do then in terms of defining those items? Would you have to go into a lot of detail in terms of actually defining what each of the particular line items were? And I think there was a general consensus in the room that actually you don't need to go into an enormous amount of detail. What you can do is provide some general principles for what should be in operating profit, what should be in EBIT. We talked about, again, cost of goods sold, which I think, or a gross profit line. And providing some general principles around that, and then key to understandability from the user's perspective was some disclosures around what exactly is in those items, so you know what's been included in those particular items. We did talk a little bit about alternative performance measures. There was some suggestion with if we looked at something like a recurring operating profit, could we or should we be saying something about a recurring? For example, should we say that restructuring seems to be a fact of life for a lot of companies, so actually putting restructuring costs into a non-recurring bucket, it could potentially be inappropriate. But I think there was quite a bit of pushback from that from the PERAs in terms of saying, well, actually it really does depend upon the particular industry, the particular company, in terms of what's looking at recurring, non-recurring. I mean, we would much prefer a more principle-based approach. And I think some of the users in there were relatively relaxed about that. Again, as long as there were sufficient disclosures around what was going where and what was being included in things. We talked about particular line items. I think I've already mentioned them, but the idea of operating profit, the idea of gross profit, the idea of an EBIT total, those all seem to be getting a certain amount of support in there. There was one suggestion, which was that perhaps one thing that we might need to look at is industry-specific standards in this area, that actually, given the variations between industries and the for example, Tesco's is very different from a bank, and so you may need to actually provide some very different structures of the profit and loss account in order to be able to tell the story. And should we actually be thinking about industry-specific standards, which of course traditionally in the ISB we haven't looked at. We touched briefly on the taxonomy and the implications that the taxonomy and electronic reporting might have for the structure, and the idea that for a taxonomy to work well, perhaps we do need more structure to the primary financial statements than we have at the moment. But there were some concerns that we don't end up with a taxonomy, if you like, setting the structure for the primary financial statements by the back door. And so I think there was a support for the idea of having a structure that might support the use of the taxonomy, but the taxonomy shouldn't actually be driving what ends up in our financial statements. We briefly touched on the balance sheet at the end, and we were talking about this idea of aligning the structure of the balance sheet with the structure of the cash flow statement with the structure of profit and loss. Immediately, the preparers in the room started throwing up their hands in horror and saying, well, we don't want the matrix approach back that was in the old reporting financial performance project. And we said, well, yes, but we don't have to go as far as that. What we could do is just look to be aligning things like align operating profit in the cash flow statement with operating profit in the profit or loss with some operating assets and liabilities in the balance sheet. And again, there's some discussion around that, and I think from the users there was some support of those sorts of ideas. And I think that broadly summarises the discussions, but please, if anybody from my group thinks I've missed anything, please dive in.
We've got a couple of comments, Martin.
Yeah, it's actually surprising that none of us really has yet touched on definition of debt, which is obviously a subtotal on the balance sheet that has got some flag and IAS amendments IAS 7. So obviously then it was a problem. Somehow we are not yet touching on that. It is a very heavily used line item by analysts to get to enterprise value and also to know a little bit more details on, like covenants, like foreign exchange. And it is a bit overlooked in the discussion here, I feel, even though we tend to feel rather comfortable with the balance sheet, but somehow that is we haven't touched on yet.
You'd like a definition, standardization?
Yeah. It's you need one for judging whether something is interest or not. So if you want to define EBIT, I guess you need to define debt as well. So you cannot say, oh, we do define interest, but oh, let's forego on debt. you need it to some extent. It will be a challenge as well, just like operating profit. But I do think it would add to include it.
Mitch?
Just in the context of the comments made about standards of reporting for different industries, to be careful there, just because, I mean, that's, you're in, put yourself in a rabbit hole, that's the expression, but I think you could do something more broad, like banks, insurance, and corporates. They're all very, I mean, those are the big subcategories, but, I mean, you start doing telecoms from retail, you can go on and on and on. I had one analyst cut out a sector, something like, it was something effective, sort of like, consumer non-cyclical outdoor furniture or something like that. It's not going to really help the situation, you know, but, you know, maybe banks, insurance. Just thank you, Martin, for that comment on debt. My point, we did talk about a little bit in our group, which was that we need better disclosure.
You hate us.
The point is that capital structures over the past 10 years have become increasingly complex, particularly on the financial side. And we need to recognize that. I'm not sure about definition of debt. Would love to take up that debate. I have my mind hasn't sort of bent that far yet, but certainly, you know, full capital structures, what's secured, what's unsecured, what's you know, subordinated, and then the banks, you've got, I mean, one of the banks recently launched a tier 3 security. I mean, you know, so, you know, whether that's directly on the balance sheet or if not, it absolutely should be disclosed, you know, very simply and consistently in the footnotes, that we can break that out in our leverage ratios and how we want to calculate enterprise value. But
okay, Amy?
Rachel's comment about taxonomy reminded me of something that came out of our group's discussion that is a generic version of what Mitch was just saying, which is when we talked about what was missing and what problem, there was a sense that line items alone were not enough, that subtotals were also important. And a couple of the, you know, these are sound bites, but it, to me, it makes it comes alive. The that you need a common starting point to start a discussion with, whether it's talking to the company or doing a comparison. You could ask questions about what was in there, but it was interesting in a group that included, you know, let me characterize our members of CMAC as sophisticated users of financial statements. They said it wasn't just about having the data, you know, the line items. They wanted the subtotals, and they wanted a degree of comparability around the subtotals, and that both of those were important to driving improvements in P&L, not just line items.
If I can just clarify or add to that, it was subtotals created by the preparer, just to be real clear, their subtotals. Right? No.
I don't think.
That's how I interpret it.
Sorry about that. I'm not sure. Didn't spend enough time on that, but it was that every. So while we went around the room, everybody thought that operating profit was a missing subtotal, and that it was important to get that subtotal, not just the components of it.
And there was also a lot of commentary that it was important to get consistency, though.
Mm-hmm.
I think. I mean, we didn't specifically say, okay, we need to mandate this and this or that, but across companies as well.
Okay, let's go to Kachira. Last one. Kachira's doing a lot of work on this for us at the moment,
so
this is all good input for him.
Thank you very much. So I will be quick, I'm conscious of the time. So let me start from the problem of the income statement. We have a clear consensus on the problem on the varied structure, especially now in different jurisdictions. Sometimes national standards that provide guidance and ended up difference in structure of the income statement among different jurisdictions. And people think that this is something we can ISP can work on. And in terms of the no definition of operating profit subtotal, depends on the meaning of the operating subtotal, people might have some skepticism. For example, if we think about defining non-recurring or such kind of things, it might be very difficult. On the other hand, some mechanical subtotals such as EBIT, it could work. So like these are the results of the discussion. And in terms of the problems with the use of performance measures, again, it depends. Sometimes the adjustments are valid. On the other hand, certain adjustments are opportunistic, for example, excluding these compensation expenses, something like that. So the member suggested projects should carefully look at what kind of adjustments in practice are happening, and we should carefully analyze that. And in terms of the way forward, chances are we can look at how we can structure the income statement. For example, maybe we can look at some guidance in national standard setters. So France, Brazil, Belgium, in these jurisdictions, there are guidances how income statement should be structured. And also, we might explore if we can define EBIT. On the other hand, how to approach the alternative performance measure, there are some difference in views, but many people think that it would be very difficult to define the alternative performance measure. Rather, people prefer to provide guidance on alternative performance measures. For example, what is non-recurring? What is recurring? So these kind of guidance will end up the more consistency and more comparability. And in terms of the balance sheet, people agree the interaction between balance sheet and other primary financial statements should be clearer, and also disaggregation is a problem in balance sheet. So these are the comments.
Good. Thanks, Kishore.
The only comment I wanted to make is a lot of the comments on the profit and loss, all of our comments were limited to the profit and loss statement, even though the questions also referenced OCI. So I don't know if any of the groups talked about OCI, but that it was part of the question.
I think we were just trying to be complete in naming the statement profit and loss and OCI, we weren't intending people to talk about the split between the two.
Okay.
Other questions, or you're all exhausted after a long good input for us, I think, that the team will take away. I think there was some of the groups I was in concerned that we might be resurrecting all of the FSP and the detail and matrix, things like that. That's not the intention. The intention is to think afresh. Obviously, we'll use the input that we got from that, but we're thinking afresh as to how we might tackle some of these things and the linkages that arise from it. So thank you all for your input today. And we'll see you tomorrow for financial instruments with a